You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 38. This minute opens with Shaw still saying, "Hey, Fifield, where are you going?" and ends with David climbing a ladder.
"I'm just a geologist. I like rocks. I love rocks. Now, it's clear you two don't give a shit about rocks, but what you do seem to care about is gigantic dead bodies. And I don't really have anything to contribute in the gigantic dead body arena! I'm gonna go back to the ship, if you don't mind. Anyone want to join me, hey? You staying?"
No, ship's good.
Yeah, ship very good."
This dialogue is just comically bad. As I said in the last minute, this freakout isn't justified or well executed. Shaw just stands there while Fifield screams in her face, so she's pretty badass here, to her credit, totally calm, cool, and collected. Fifield then gets up in Milburn's face. Milburn seems kind of non-committal. Ship's good. So we have two characters who haven't been given much room to actually develop as characters, now acting in ways that have not been justified in any way. I've already mentioned how I would have written this scene in the previous minute, and expanding on that, I think Milburn chasing after Fifield because he's concerned for his well-being is more in line with the Milburn we know, who has no sense of danger but is quite infatuated with Fifield. That would have sort of given it a little bit more complexity. In fact, in Spate's script, Milburn says, "I should go with him, buddy system." Now, this could have ended up being played in a number of different ways had they filmed it, but I read it as implying he's not so much scared, just concerned. As they walk away, Milburn says under his breath,
"I thought you were the crazy one."
I never noticed that before. I guess he's saying that he thought Fifield was the crazy one, but everyone who has chosen to say is actually crazy. It wasn't that long ago that both Milburn and Fifield were laughing at the idea of aliens and gods. Now, at the slightest sign of spooky shit, they lose their minds. I simply don't understand Lindelof's logic here. It must have been a challenge for the actors to have to deal with such inconsistent characters. To their credit, they do a decent job with what they had to work with. I think Rafe Spall and Sean Harris are quite charismatic and talented. Meanwhile, in the background of all this drama, David does not give a single shit. He never once looks over at the humans. He's entirely focused on the wall. Ford is pretty underrated, but she's a team player, never complaining, just focusing on the work at hand. As far as I can tell, she's a medical doctor, but she's cool with helping with whatever. She never really gets much of a character arc. She's just useful and agreeable, and that's about it. Returning to our script segment, specifically Spate's engineer script. Interesting to note that while the crew acknowledge that the air is breathable, no one even thinks to remove their helmets. I'm not sure they ever do, but we shall see in future minutes. And here's another moment of significance. To quote, "In front of them lies a dead giant, an engineer. If he were standing, he would be 15 feet tall. He's roughly human in shape, barrel-chested, withered to the bones. There are bulky protrusions fused with his flesh, hard to say whether they are equipment or parts of his body. His head, lolling to one side, is severed from his body. His eyes seem to be covered by goggles, but if so, then the goggles are fused with his skull. An elephantine proboscis, severed now, once connected to a protrusion on his hip. The giant lies frozen in a convulsion of agony, his jaw gaping in a silent scream. His corpse is marred by hideous wounds, slashes that cut through the bone. Beyond the dead giant, a vision of hell, a dozen dead engineers lie heaped against a sealed door, twisted in postures of torment, murdered in the attempt to escape. All bear horrific wounds, scene of an ancient massacre." So, well, I mean, this was designed to be a more direct Alien prequel, and this moment especially does feel more in line with the original Alien. And also, I feel it's constructing a little bit more of a story with the dead engineers. There's so much more ambiguity with the solo dead engineer we see in the film. I'm not exactly sure which one I prefer. I think either is quite intriguing. Also of note is that Holloway is evidently a Christian in this draft. Here's his response when he sees the dead engineer. "There were giants in the earth in those days, and when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, they bare children to them who became mighty men." Genesis 6:4. Oh boy, this relates to some big, complicated, and often convoluted topics, one being the Nephilim, the other being the canonicity of biblical texts. I'll attempt to give a brief overview, focusing mainly on the details that relate most directly to Prometheus. Holloway's quote is a Bible passage about the Nephilim, who are rather mysterious beings, and interpretations as to what they are vary considerably. But the popular version is that they are some kind of angel-human hybrids. A majority of texts about angels are apocryphal, namely the Book of Enoch. This means that there's not much to be known about angels, or Nephilim, based on canonical texts. For those that did not have a religious upbringing, apocrypha is any text that isn't considered canonical. In the simplest terms, this may be due to the origin or authorship of the text being unverifiable, but this is also one of the reasons we have so many variations of Christianity. The Hebrew Bible is considered to be the most reliable source, but there are many other versions of the Bible that have emerged over the centuries. There's also the Latin Vulgate and the Greek Old Testament, which are only considered canonical by some groups and not others, or certain texts are once considered canon and then later omitted. Oh, also the Roman Catholics have the proto-canonical texts and the deuterocanonical texts, so a kind of primary and secondary canon. Get your head around that. Some groups actually do consider the Book of Enoch canon, specifically the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church and the Eritrean Orthodox Tewahedo Church. So, canon is a whole thing, but that's about all the background you need before we delve into the Nephilim properly. The passage Holloway quotes is basically the only canonical reference to them. It is generally agreed that they were the offspring of angels and human women. I didn't think angels had a gender or genitals, but where there's a will, there's a way, I guess. The sons of God came unto the daughters of men indeed. I'll stop. It is said that they were wiped out during the Great Flood. Apparently they were not invited onto the Ark. We don't even really have a consensus on what the name Nephilim means. Some say giants, others say fallen. Were they even giant in stature? Even that is up for debate. Growing up, I was absolutely fascinated by angels. Not the benign Aryan motherfuckers with the white wings that decorate your grandparents' house. No, I'm talking about the scary inhuman creatures described in the Bible. The cherubim, for instance, aren't the cute little cherubs you're imagining. In fact, the little winged babies are supposed to be called putti, which is Italian in origin. Cherub just seemed to replace the term in general culture for some reason. Cherub are, in fact, a many-faced, many-winged monstrosity. And the rest of the hierarchy of angels are a bizarre bestiary that would make David proud. Again, this is a subject that I could dedicate at least an hour to, but I shall endeavour to keep this on track. I think it's no surprise that of all aspects of Catholicism, I liked angels the most. They are basically androids. And Neander Wallace in Blade Runner 2049 refers to the replicants as his angels. Angels and androids are these beautiful, perfect, divine creatures that lack a soul. Neither angels nor androids have free will. They were created to serve. I suppose I've always found it fascinating that in these interpretations, perfection comes at a cost. To be human is to be imperfect. To have insecurities and weaknesses. But humans also appreciate a level of freedom and identity that the supposedly superior angels and androids lack. As if to say perfection and freedom are on the opposite ends of a spectrum, that personality and individuality are equal to imperfection. These ideas have permeated throughout our history, and yet we've never witnessed a perfect being. Such a thing is entirely theoretical and subjective. How is it that we've just come to agree on these ideas on some unspoken level? How do the engineers tie into this? Well, my theory that I've sort of implied in early episodes is that the engineers are essentially angels. The engineers are these giant, impossibly perfect beings. They seem to lack individuality or identity, and by extension, perhaps a soul. Based on what we have seen, namely the sacrifice of the engineer at the beginning of the film, I believe that the engineers worship or serve some higher power. They seem more like angels than gods, tools rather than creators. Nephilim is not the right term at all. They have no love for mankind. They don't seem to rebel against their intended purpose. They seem subservient, at least from my interpretation. All these elements are fascinating to me. Mythology, philosophy, science, and technology. The relationship between creation and creator. The fact that Prometheus taps into all of this is likely why I can easily return to it over and over again and never run out of things to say. But for now, that about wraps it up. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TraviandDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Midnight on Facebook. Thanks again for your support on Ko-fi, reviews on Facebook and iTunes and all of that. I appreciate it a lot.